Well, good morning, Hamilton Mill. Hope you're doing awesome this morning. Well, I wanted to let you know I love something. I love playing board games. Anybody a board game lover in here with me? Okay, wow, a bunch of you. I love board games. I love anything from like strategy games where like Catan or Catan, however you're supposed to say it. I'm not a super fan like that. But I love sitting down and just coming up with the strategy of how to win, how to compete. Another one of my favorite games, Exploding Kittens. Oh my gosh, that game creates frenemies so fast, but it is so much fun. Now, There's one game that divides our family when we sit down like no other game, and it's this game, Monopoly. Oh, yep, y'all know what I'm saying. In fact, you know how it divides our family? My family will never play this game with me ever again. Well, and here's why. I'm ruthless. I gotta win. Like, I have to win. I need to win this game. Like, I am that kind of guy who's like, I take that verse, that statement Jesus made where he says, be as innocent as doves, but as shrewd as serpents. Oh, that shrewdness, that's me all day, every day. I kind of blame it on my business mindset, my background, and it just comes out. I mean, you can't blame me, right? The point of the game is to bankrupt everyone else, including my kids. And no, I don't let them win. I'm trying to teach them life skills, amen, right? And so that is my goal. I love to win. And I would say, that's a lot of us in this room, a majority of this room. We would say our goal is maybe not to win as much as in Monopoly as me, but you like to win. No one wakes up in the morning and go, all I want to do today is lose, lose, lose. Like, no one feels that way. Most of us will agree, I want to feel like I'm winning at life. And that's what we're going to be talking about today in this series, is A Beginner's Guide to Winning at Life. But the question I do want to ask you is, how do you know when you're winning at life? How do you actually know when you feel like you're winning at life? Maybe if you're like a parent, you're like, I feel like I'm winning at life when I actually can get my kids to school on time, right? Oh my gosh. Or maybe you're like, you feel like you're winning when you drop 20 pounds and you get swole and you've got your spring break bod getting ready for that. Maybe if you're a sneakerhead, you're like, when I get those pair of off-white Jordans, that's when I know I'm winning at life. Or how about this? Hold on. What if you sit down with a bowl of ice cream, especially if it's Jenny's brown butter almond brittle? Oh, then you're like, I am winning. For me, it's fixing something. It's when I'm able to fix something on my own without either paying someone or getting someone else's help, I'm able to fix something. If you remember back in my series in the fall, I talked about a hole in my basement ceiling. I just want to let you know, some of you asked, 6 months later, I finally fixed it. I'm like, yes, I felt so good. I felt like I was winning at life, so much so that I went out and bought a bunch of tools that I have no idea how to use, but I'm ready for the next project. Well, let's get serious for a moment. Maybe for you, you need to feel like you're winning at life if you just got into that school, or maybe if you could be in a relationship, or if you had a great relationship with your adult children or even your grandchildren, or at work, if you're like, I would feel like I'm winning if I just got that promotion, or if I landed that account or landed that sale. Or maybe you're like, if I would just own a home, then I would feel like winning. See, for all of us, our goal is to have that feeling or to know we're winning. Now, we might not call it winning. For some of us, it might be happiness. It might feel like contentment or like I'm in control or I know what to do. Those are synonymous with feeling like we're winning. But here's the problem. How do we know when we've actually won at life? Like, when do we get to that point where we're like, I'm good. I've won at life. Kind of reminds me of that board game. Do you know this board game? Life. Anybody here play this game? The game of life, right? You get in your car, you go choose your career, and you make lots of money, and then you go build a family. And the goal of the game is to get more stuff and more money than anyone else at the end when you hit the end. But really, that's the only way when you've won that game, that's the only way you can say, I've won at life. But here's the problem. We can never get there till the end. And actually, the goal is to feel like we're winning. Emphasis on the ing. See, you can feel like you're winning every single day. You can feel like you got your kids to school, you landed that account, or you have a great relationship with people. But what happens when that goes away? Like, something just comes out of nowhere, right? And then you're like, I don't feel like I'm winning anymore. I feel like I'm constantly losing. Let me ask you this. This past week, did you feel like you were winning? Did you feel like I'm good to go? Did you feel like I was winning and then all of a sudden something happened and you're like, I just feel like I'm losing now? It's hard to feel like we're winning these days, isn't it? I mean, think about it. COVID. We thought it would be gone. And then all of a sudden this variant Delta comes and then Omicron comes. Who knows what's next? Megatron? Like, what's this next Transformer coming? Right? It's like so hard to feel like you're winning, and it creates such an uncertainty within us. Stuff is starting to cost more because of inflation. Supply chain, there keeps being delays, right? And it's hard to make decisions because there's such a lack of clarity. You don't know what news to trust. You don't know where to go for your source of information. And then these markets, they're all over the place. Job market, financial market, housing market are crazy right now. And that lends to a whole host of emotional problems. See, we're dealing with emotions we've never had to deal with before, right? There's so many emotions that we don't know what to do with. That's why anxiety is higher than ever. Depression is higher than ever. And get this, sleep aid sales are at an all-time record high. So here's what I'll tell you. What if there is a way that you could actually know if you're winning at life? What if there's a way that I can show you today that you could say, you can be confident that no matter what happens, you can feel like you're winning at life? Well, that's what we're going to be talking about in this series, A Beginner's Guide to Winning at Life. So for the next 3 weeks, I want to give you some simple steps, three simple steps to help you always feel like you're winning at life. Now, it is called A Beginner's Guide. The stuff I'm going to talk about, it's not revolutionary. You're going to be like, Raul, really? It's simple things. Here's what I've learned, though. I feel like we are educated way beyond our obedience, right? We've got the world's information in our hands right now with everything we could possibly have from past, present, and even helps us predict the future. But the thing is, do we actually apply it? As teachers in the room would be like, I agree with you, Raul. I teach all the day and no one applies it. And that's what I want to help you understand is the things we're going to talk about today, you need to apply it. And it doesn't matter how old you are in the room. This is stuff that'll help you. And if you start now, it'll help you know that you are winning at life. So, that kind of reminds me of this old 90s, when I grew up in the 90s watching Saturday morning cartoons, this commercial would come on with this logo. And see if you remember, you know it. The more you know, right? Anybody know that jingle? And they always talk about having all this knowledge so that you know what's happening and you know what to do. But the thing is, if we never apply this information, even today they're still having these commercials, it doesn't really matter. So for step one this morning, here's what we're going to look at. I want to look at a parable that the author Matthew told in his biography about Jesus. And in this, Jesus is on the Sermon on the Mount, his most famous sermon. And whether you grew up in church or not, or whether you're a follower of Jesus or not, you might have heard about this message. See, Jesus stands up by the Sea of Galilee talking to his disciples. And he starts giving this manifesto, this brand new life-giving community, this so countercultural that a giant crowd starts forming. And people are like, wow. He is teaching with such authority, and this is really when he gets famous and starts getting popular and gaining a crowd. And he tells things like, be generous instead of holding on to your things. Pray and God will hear you. Love your enemies. You just got to read it. It is amazing, the things he says, and it's so different even for us today. And he gets to the end of his Sermon on the Mount, and he tells this parable about two builders. And these two builders do everything the same except for one thing. And this one thing is what's going to help us figure out what step one is to winning at life. So here's what Jesus says. Therefore, now pause. Anytime you see a therefore, you got to find out why it's there for, which means you don't ever want to read a verse by itself and take it out of context. You've got to build it with what's going on before it. And essentially what Jesus was saying is here, in light of all the principles and all the life skills I just taught you, listen to what I'm about to say and then apply it. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice, there's the knowledge versus application we talked about, is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And a wise man is someone who's winning at life, someone who knows what to do and applies that knowledge. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. Yet it did not fall. Why? Because its foundation had been built on the rock. See, back then, a storm could come and violent rivers would raise up and a flash flood would happen out of nowhere. So people were constantly wondering what would happen to their house. Now, he juxtaposes the wise man with the foolish man. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice, here's the difference, right? Is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. And here's the result. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. And what happened? It fell with a great crash. And so we see two builders, right? They did everything the same. They said they built their house. They heard the words of Jesus. They had a foundation and a storm came. But one built their house on something soft, which was sand. One built their house on something that was solid, which was rock. And the difference here is what the solid was the rock and the soft was the sand. But when one was building on a sand, what would happen when the storm came? It just crumbled just like this. It just completely crumbled completely and it was gone. And so I asked the question as I was reading this, I was like, why would anyone build their house on sand? Why would anyone build their house on something soft? Well, back then, they didn't have the same tools we had today. They didn't have the same knowledge and they didn't have the same expertise. And so people back then, it was expensive. It took forever to lay a foundation and they couldn't even find the right people half the time. Plus on top of that, man, they just wanted to be like us and live by the water. It's a desirable place. Real estate properties by water is always more expensive, by an ocean or by lake. But what's around that in that vicinity? Sand. And so people were like, I don't want to deal with that. I don't want to wait for a builder to come to level out the ground, to grade it, to bring in rock and to make sure it's firm and then pour the slab and wait for it to be firm. Then I can build my house. I just want to put it on sand and not worry about it. But as we know today, that's dumb. That is not wise, is it? Because every good house starts with a good and a great foundation. And so we can all agree that a foundation is the most important part of a home. Without a solid foundation, what happens? Your house will be wrecked. The elements will ruin it. And when a storm comes, it's gone. Let me give you an example. My house is built on a slope. If my builder had not leveled that land and dug into the land and made a straight foundation, what would have happened when a storm came? We would have gone for a joyride in our house, right? It would have been gone as soon as a rainstorm came and we would have been without a house and it would have been terrible. But we, just as we've seen with this story, we always know that we have to build on a good foundation. That is what's most important. Now, it was a parable that Jesus was talking about. He wasn't saying literally, okay, make sure you have a rock for a foundation. Make sure your house is built physically on a rock. What he was talking about, and essentially what he was saying was our lives. And what he was basically saying was you can't win at life with a soft foundation. You can't win at life with a foundation that isn't hard as a rock like this. See, when I push on this, what happens? Obviously nothing, right? That's the goal. That's why builders today use a slab. And the goal of it is to be a foundation that lasts for how long? Forever. That's the goal when a builder builds a foundation today. And so anybody who builds their life on a firm foundation, on a rock, when the storms of life come, what's your response going to be? I'm good. But right now in our lives, that's hard to have. There's so many things that are causing us to build our life on something that is soft, that is a soft foundation. Why? And why is that important? Well, here's why. Your foundation is what determines your future. Your foundation determines what happens to you in the future. See, what happens to you when a storm hits you, when a crisis comes, when the thing that you hoped wouldn't happen actually happens? How do you respond? Do you stand firm or do you crumble like sand, like this, and it just goes away and you just start freaking out? You get anxiety, you get angry, you start worrying more and more about what's happening next. And the reason is because your foundation that you're building today determines what happens in the future. And you can't build your foundation in the middle of a storm, can you? It's too wet, it's too soft, it will never be firm enough. But you've got to build on a firm foundation. So essentially what Jesus was saying is if you can't win a life on a soft foundation, let me explain exactly what I mean by soft foundation, because you might be like, what are you exactly talking about? Well, see, for our lives, it's so easy to build our lives of things that are happening to us, circumstances that we put our hope in. And we all put our hope in something these days. Maybe it's finances. Maybe the first thing you put our hope in is finances. And these days, it's hard to trust finances. What happens if the market crashes? What happens if your income doesn't live up to your expenses month after month? What happens when what's your response to that? Or maybe for you, it might be your relationships. What happens when you're like, I'm looking for the one. When I find that one, man, then my life will be awesome. Or maybe if I find a different one, because the one you have now, things are kind of shaky. Things are kind of not hoping what you're expecting, not creating that contentment or that joy. And so you're hoping to find another one where the grass is greener. But then what happens when none of those ones turn out? How do you respond? What happens in your life? Where do you put your hope and where do you put your trust in? Maybe it's your career. Maybe you're like, if I can just get that promotion at work, or if I can just find that job or find a new job, when that happens, then I'll feel like I'm winning at life. Then I know I'll be good to go. But again, what happens if that doesn't happen? Maybe it's your health. For me, that's a big thing. I always want to feel healthy. But for you, what happens when you lose that? Maybe you just don't feel as well, or maybe you get a diagnosis that you were hoping never happens. Or, hear my heart on this, what happens if you are hurting right now and the cure never comes that you're hoping for? How do you respond? Do you just live in despair your whole life and never with joy or happiness? And then finally, the last one, emotions. This is a big one. This one is the one I feel like all of us can relate to. What happens when you don't feel happy? When you don't feel safe? How do you respond? Or if you're a follower of Jesus in the room, maybe this emotion of the knowledge of the future, right? I like to control the future. I like to know what's going to happen. And so maybe you're praying, God, what is your will for my life? Do I go to this school? Do I take that test? Do I date this person? Do I go to this place? Do I go to this church? Do I do that? What happens if you continually put your hope in knowing the future instead of putting your hope in the one who holds your future and you never get that answer? You see, these things aren't bad to want, are they? I want these things, but too many times we put our complete hope in those things and it ends up being soft like sand instead of firm like a rock. And these are things we want. And we want to put our hope in what is a rock, and that's Jesus. See, Jesus tells us if we put our hope in him, and that's essentially what he's saying, if you put your hope in his words, which is him, then you will have a strong foundation. You will have a foundation in something that is never, ever changing. Nothing that will ever cause you to worry. Something that he will always be with you. He promises to be with you no matter what. Let me explain it this way through the author of Hebrews. They say this, let us hold unswervingly. Unswervingly means without shaking, without worrying, but truly being firm to the hope we profess. What's that hope? It's hope that Jesus is who he says he is and will do what he says he will do. So let us hold unswervingly to the hope in Jesus that we profess. Why? For he who promised is faithful. See, Jesus is the only thing that is a firm foundation. The only thing that is solid because he is faithful. But how do we know he's faithful? How do we know we can trust Jesus? Well, first of all, I'll say what Andy Stanley says. Anyone who predicts their own death and resurrection and then actually accomplishes it, I don't know about you, I'm going to follow them. And because of that, he is faithful because he sacrificed, he gave his life for you. He did it so you can have a relationship with your heavenly Father that will cause you to never, ever worry, to know that he will be with you. And he doesn't promise that life's going to be easy, and he doesn't promise he'll get you out of the storm, but he promises he'll get you through the storm. And that if you build your life on him. And when you do this, here's the cool thing. You'll have a confidence knowing that every storm you face, you'll have someone to lean on, someone to stand on, that you'll have a firm foundation. And here's what, it's even more amazing. In between storms, right? Have you ever been there where you're like, things are going well, what's about to happen? Something bad's about to happen. You won't worry, because you'll know when that next storm comes, when that next text message comes that you weren't expecting, when that next letter or the diagnosis comes, you won't have to worry, because Jesus is your rock and he is with you. And that's how you'll know you're winning at life. Because when things get shaky, you will not be shaken. When things get shaky, you won't be shaken because you're not constantly worrying. You're actually living and leaning into the free life, the full life that Jesus promises if you make him your firm foundation. You know how I know this? Well, I experienced going through a crisis, a literal storm back in 2005. Hurricane Katrina, we were in New Orleans, Annie and I. And I was working at a restaurant, and all of a sudden, the people just started talking. There's a mandatory evacuation happening today. We have to go. Now, we finish our shift as servers because we were like, really? Another one? Past two summers, we've done this. Hurricanes have come, and nothing has happened. So we were telling everybody, I'll see you in a couple days. Everything will be fine. I get home, and Annie's like, Raul, They said it's the biggest one yet, and we have to go right now. It's coming tonight. So we pack up our car, and we pack up everything we could possibly fit and we own. And this is a picture of us. Man, we haven't aged a bit, have we? We look great, Annie and I. Our kids kind of grew up. This is Colin and Griffin. He's 18 months here and 3 months here. Man, they grew up, but we look good. And we packed up everything we owned. We packed up everything that was most important to us. And you could see diapers, 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 diapers. Ream of paper. Not sure why we had to have that. But anyways, we had to have everything that was so important because we didn't know if we were coming back. We didn't think we would ever come back. So we pack up our car and we go to Wauchula, Florida. I didn't sneeze. It's a real town, Wauchula. It's where Annie's family lives. And we get there that night and we unpack all this. We unpack our car and we're watching the news. And we see the storm just berating and barraging New Orleans. We fall asleep, try to stay up as long as we can to watch the news report. And next morning we wake up and the seminary campus where we lived, and seminary is graduate school for pastors. We lived in the Ninth Ward, and if you know anything about Hurricane Katrina, water to every second floor in the Ninth Ward. And it was hard to watch, seeing people rescued from rooftops, hearing about the damage and destruction, hearing about all the lives lost. I got angry. I started getting to this place where I was getting angry at God. And I said, God, how can you let this happen? How can you do this? Why would you do this to people? And then I made it personal. And I said, God, why would you do this to me? How could you let this happen to my family? I was on a trajectory to make lots of money, to do what I wanted to do. But no, you called me to do this. And Annie and I went to seminary to New Orleans to do and make this a career for telling people about you. Why would you do this to me? How could you do this to me? So I went to bed. A couple days went by and just living with this anger and real and just being so upset with God. And then one morning I walk into Annie's parents' living room, this front room area. And it's filled with things. It's filled with diapers, praise the Lord. It's filled with expensive diapers. It's filled with toys for our kids, clothes for Annie and I. And at that moment, I realized what I was doing. I had put my hope in things that were just crumbling, that were gone, that were temporary. I put my hope in these things that God gave me instead of in the God who gave me those things. And at that moment, I realized my foundation wasn't firm and I needed to trust God to be my rock. I needed Jesus to be my firm foundation. That was the moment. So then now, no matter what I'm going through, no matter what's happening in my life, I go back to that moment in New Orleans, in that living room in Florida, and I say, gosh, God, you've got me. You're with me. You're my rock. I don't have to worry what I'm going through. Especially when we moved here and we had 3 floods in our house since we moved here. Every time I went back to that moment where that storm was so devastating, but it reminds me that Jesus is with me. And so maybe you're here today and you need to hear that. Maybe you're here today and you're like, you know what? Raul, that's great for you. But what do I do? I've been a follower of Jesus for a while and things aren't seeming to get better. I'm still dealing with this storm. This storm isn't temporary. Well, here's what I'll tell you. Go back to God being your firm foundation. Going back to that remembering that Jesus is the one who is faithful. That remember that time when he was faithful to you, and that'll cause you to look forward to the time when he will show his faithfulness to you again. So step one to winning at life is to build a solid foundation. A foundation that no matter what will not be shaken. And listen, it doesn't matter how old you are. It's not too late to start. It's never too late to start. If you're breathing, God still has a purpose for you on this earth. He still wants to use you and he still wants to be your foundation. Jesus doesn't ever see you as far too gone. Now, here's the cool thing. When you do this, no matter how old you are, it affects It'll affect every relationship in your life. It'll affect your kids, your grandkids, your friends, your coworkers, and your neighbors. And so I implore you, make Jesus your foundation. Why? Because the author of Hebrews says this: Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. You can trust him, that he gives us something to build our faith on, so that when life is tough, our foundation can withstand whatever comes our way. And so when the storms of life come, you might be shaky. You might get shaky. Things could get soft, but you will actually never be shaken. When the diagnosis comes, when you get rejected by people, when you don't get into that school, when you don't get that grade, when your car breaks down, or when you don't have the money to do what you were hoping to do, you can put your trust in something that is firm, because you know that the secret to winning in life is not putting your hope in life itself. It's putting your hope in the one who gives you life. Like I said, this is simple. It's easy. It's step one: build a solid foundation. But are you doing it? Are you putting your hope in Jesus? Or are you putting it in something soft, something that will fail you, something that causes you to respond with anxiety, with depression, with anger, with fear? And that affects every relationship around you, not even just yourself. Or when things get shaky, when the storm comes, do you run to Jesus as a first response, to the first place?